The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nothing perfect or considered, but we're so damn good. It's the story of your life. You're moving down the page, and you know you're on your way. The story of your life. You live it every day. You can run, you run, but you won't get away.
Glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt in mourning. The Cleveland Browns fought the valiant fight in Kansas City yesterday. Came up a little bit short. Great season. Baker Mayfield and company had a great season. Kevin Stefanski is coach of the year. And they're not the first team to get out-coached by Andy Reid. I hope Patrick Mahomes is back. They're a heck of a team. And next year, the Browns will reload. They'll have Grant Delpit back. They'll have Greedy Williams back. They will have a healthy team in a year to install the system. And they went farther than any Browns team since 1994. So my hat is off to them. Just sad to lose. Now to the serious news of this Monday morning. More than 35,000 troops and National Guardsmen, military on duty, active duty, are deployed in the streets of Washington. Fencing is throughout the downtown area. It does not appear as though any demonstrations are planned, but there have been a few arrests of people carrying weapons where they ought not to have been arrested. The Washington Post also reports that state capitol protests are mostly small, nevertheless heavily guarded. Authorities in cities, it writes, from coast to coast, mobilized a military-style defense of state capitol complexes on Sunday, rolling out Humvees, concertina wire, thousands of National Guard troops clad in battlefield helmets to defend against the possible onslaught of rioters whipped up by baseless claims of the American president. I think that's a little overstated, but this is not. The FBI is moving on members of extremist groups, the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters. I've not heard of either of these groups, but they are apparently fringe fanatics. Another private paramilitary training group called the Woodland Wild Dogs is also under scrutiny, and that should go forward. I have a new column over at the Washington Post this morning, which I'll read for you later in the hour. Mitch McConnell, still the crucial Republican leader, and it's about how the party has to rally behind Mitch McConnell now. Now, of course, there are other leaders at the state level like Ron DeSantis in Florida, Governor Doug Ducey in Arizona, many other great governors. Of course, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Liz Cheney, Tom Emmer in the House are great leaders. But Mitch McConnell really becomes the most powerful Republican at any level. He has a united caucus. He will keep it together. It runs from moderates like Susan Collins to the most conservative member, whoever that might be. Maybe it's Ted Cruz. I'm not sure. It depends on how you're scoring and what issues you're looking at. But they usually will be persuaded to take a middle course, and Mitch will be intent upon regaining the majority in the 2022 elections, for which they are well prepared. The map is a little bit against them, but history is with them. And so I'll come back to that column later. Phil Spector died. Now, he's a murderer. Phil Spector was convicted in 2003. Yeah, 2009, for killing Lana Clarkson, a nightclub hostess who he'd taken to his home after a night of drinking. And he's a very despicable character in some regard. But his music, the Phil Spector Wall of Sound, is part of everyone's, who's over the age of 45, musical DNA. Tom Wolfe wrote a 1965 essay about him called The First Tycoon of Teen, a one-man hit factory. Between 1960 and 65, he put 24 records in the top 40, many of them classics. So we'll play Phil Spector music today. After I was off the show on Friday, industrial production was announced to have risen a solid 1.6%. That's very good. The worst news of the weekend is the total screw-up of the vaccine distribution system in many states. Now, it's working well in Texas. Governor Greg Abbott's doing a great job in Texas. If your vaccine distribution is screwed up anywhere but the District of Columbia, it's because of your state government, your local governments. The federal government has done its job. It's produced the vaccine. It's gotten it out. And that which has gotten out has not gotten to the people. Thus far in the United States, I'll check the latest, 31 million doses distributed. Only 10,595,000 people have received one or more doses. So one-third of the doses out. What is that? It's last-mile breakdown. Long story in the Wall Street Journal, which I will return to. It is because government insisted on overcomplicated a simple process. In Orange County, they had a 40-person committee, at least two-thirds of whom had nothing to do with health care. This was not hard. Designate, as they finally got around to doing, I'm told by a friend who received the vaccine, the Disneyland parking lot was designated as a vaccine center. If you were over the age of 65 or had an underlying condition, drive there. Get a vaccine. It worked fine yesterday. That's all you need to do. Americans will self-regulate. There are some frauds will show up and say they've got an underlying condition. They don't have one. But that's all you need to do. And it will self-select. You don't have to go around hunting for people. Just tell them where to go. It's not that hard. It's not hard at all. It would have been easy, except it had to be overcomplicated by politics. President-elect Biden is threatening to shut off the Keystone XL oil pipeline. Now, that will be a very interesting decision. It will evoke, of course, lawsuits having to do with the right of government to revoke permits on which they have relied. I look forward more to the litigation than I do to the pipeline, actually. I believe it will give the new Supreme Court a chance to weigh in on the property rights and expectation rights and reliance rights of people issued permits by the government. There's a Wall Street Journal story, Biden's first spending blowout. Look, I don't know whether I'm for or against the $1.9 trillion COVID spending plan, which comes on top of $3.8 trillion already approved by the Congress in the last year. Whether or not it makes sense depends on what it does. And as I talked with Austin Goolsbee, Obama-era economist on Friday, extending unemployment for people who cannot find jobs makes sense if they're restaurant workers. Getting businesses back up and running, business interruption insurance, a Josh Hawley idea from long ago, makes sense. But if they're just blowing money on state and local governments, I hope that Mitch can find one Democrat to stand with him. Actually, it's not being done under reconciliation, so they'll have to find 10 Republicans in the Senate. The very brave Alexei Navalny returned to Russia yesterday. He's the Russia opposition leader. Now, he doesn't have an official position. It's just he is well known as the most opposed to Putin. 44-year-old Navalny was poisoned in Germany by a nerve agent. He's recovered. He flew back and he was arrested. Jake Sullivan, who I believe is going to be a very good national security advisor, replacing outgoing Ambassador Robert O'Brien, immediately tweeted, Mr. Navalny should be immediately released and the perpetrators of the outrageous attack on his life must be held accountable. The Kremlin's attacks on Mr. Navalny are not just a violation of human rights, but an affront to the Russian people who want their voices heard. Jake Sullivan is correct. From China comes news, if you can believe it, that their GDP rose 6.5% in the fourth quarter. I don't know if you can believe anything out of the Chinese Communist Party. But if that's true, that's a 2.3% growth in a year where every other major economy suffered. If that is in fact true, China authoritarian measures like welding people into their apartment buildings in the early part of the outbreak and not telling the world gave them an economic advantage. I believe upon investigation, we will determine that China knew what it was doing, not in the release of the vaccine, that with negligence or recklessness, and it appears still to be a very good possibility it came out of the lab as opposed to a wet market. But it's definitely out of Wuhan province, and it was definitely not, the world was definitely not alerted. And by not alerting the world, it allowed the world to suffer terribly while China got a head start on shutting it down. Also point out, Israel's coming election in March is going to be of incredible importance to the world. I'll tell you more about that today. And Boris Johnson in Great Britain hails a new milestone as more than 5.6 million people are invited to get their jabs. New phase of their vaccine rollout. This is terrific. The world is catching up. More when I come back. You're listening to today's Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. The Ronettes, Be My Baby, one of Phil Spector's 24 great hits. He's a murderer. But he could play. He was a murderer. He's dead. But he could make music. Hey, I want to tell everyone 2021 is off to a disturbing start for conservatives. They are being muzzled across the United States. And there is a movie, No Safe Spaces, that includes biologist and evolutionary theorist Brett Weinstein. He gave this warning about political correctness running amok.
If this is allowed to continue, it is going to work its way into the entire apparatus of government, journalism, maybe most seriously into the tech sector, which has become the governance apparatus for the new public square. YouTube and Google, Facebook and Twitter dictate whose voices can be heard. And if those entities start trying to engineer the conversation to adhere to the rules laid out with these phony Trojan horse terms, disaster will be the result.
Now, there are two things I want you to do about this. One, just don't complain. Go see No Safe Spaces to get smart. You go to salemnow.com, salemnow.com, which is a sponsor of the show because this show is distributed by the Salem Network. And you can get your copy of No Safe Spaces. Use my name, Hugh, for your discount. And then a book which is not sponsored by Salem, Shoshana Zuboff, has written a book that I spent probably 12 hours listening to. It's about halfway through. It's 600 pages, entitled Surveillance Capitalism. And Professor Zuboff has retired from the Harvard Business School. I don't know this for sure. I believe she's a neo-Marxist. She's certainly of the left. She is a very vociferous critic of President Trump and supporter of Joe Biden. That says nothing about the work that she's done on big tech. The work that she's done on big tech is, in fact, groundbreaking, I believe illuminating, quite arresting, and very explicit about the dangers of the concentration of power and wealth in Silicon Valley. And I've invited her to be on the show, but more importantly, I need you to read Shoshana Zuboff. Z as in Zorro, U, B as in boy, O-F-F, Zuboff. And you ought to be able to remember the title, Surveillance Capitalism. I recommend you listen to it and listen to it and listen to it. It is that important. Now, speaking of capitalism, let's see what the markets are doing. This is brought to you by Birch Gold. Remember, we face an era unlike any other where the national debt, which rose under President Trump, don't get me wrong, in the first 3 years of Trump, the national debt went up. But through the course of the virus across the world, money was printed in quantities we've never seen before. And it continues to be printed in quantities we've never seen before. If that accelerates, inflation comes. If inflation comes of the sort that I worry about, gold will be a necessary part of your portfolio. Now, I'm not a gold bug. I own gold, physical gold. Other people put it in their retirement account. I just own it and put it away in a safety deposit box. And that's what I recommend you do. And you can buy physical gold from Birch Gold by visiting HughGold.com or texting my name, Hugh, to 474747. They are also the experts on rolling over a portion of your IRA. 10 to 25% is my maximum recommendation, 25%. You've got to be diversified. You've got to be in stocks, bonds, real estate, and precious metals. And they will help you do that. And their free information kit available when you go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. On Friday, the Dow was down 177 points, the NASDAQ down 114, and the S&P down 27. Overseas this morning, though, most everything is green. Japan went down 1%. Hong Kong went up 1%. And England and Germany are up a little bit. Gold is at $1,837 an ounce, and the 10-year Treasury is at 1.1%. That's still low. That's still very low. We don't see inflation yet. The 30-year Treasury is only at 1.85%. That's non-inflationary. But I am worried about this vast amount of money. If it accelerates, the amount of goods have not increased that much. But the amount of money in the world has increased by an enormous amount. If that money picks up and people stop producing debt and stop hoarding their cash or investing in the market where there is inflation in market prices, watch out for the cost of groceries and everything else. I'll be right back, America. My column in the Washington Post on Mitch McConnell when I return to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hugh Hewitt, joined by Jake Sherman of PunchBowlNews.com, the must-go, must-read daily digest of what's going on in D.C. Jake, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Hugh. I'm well. How are you?
Good. I was just reading PunchBowl this morning. I want to go to the Operation Warp Speed. I disagree with the Politico article that Operation Warp Speed has crash-landed. In fact, the last-mile delivery by state and local governments is a mess, but the overall Operation Warp Speed is a scientific government cooperation of unprecedented velocity and success in the development of vaccine. Most people thought the vaccine wouldn't arrive at best until this coming summer.
Yeah, listen, I think I have read the story like you have. I don't know enough to know. I know that Dan Diamond, who wrote the piece, is one of the best healthcare reporters. He also just left Politico for the Washington Post. Listen, I think that yes, there are elements of Operation Warp Speed that are a massive success, including, you know, the speed with which we got a vaccine. But there are some questions about the administering, which, by the way, it doesn't necessarily fall with the federal government. It could fall with state and local governments.
Yeah, that's exactly. In California, it's a fiasco, an utter fiasco. In Texas, it's working pretty well. I just thought, you know, if they can take a shot at Trump, they take a shot at Trump. Let me go to the Austin waiver, because this is original reporting, as far as I know from you. I didn't know the status of General Austin's waiver. Give us the update, because, of course, this matters to every man and woman in uniform in the United States and, of course, everyone else at DOD.
And everyone else in the country, frankly, because I think everybody agrees that there should be a defense secretary close to day one of any presidential administration. The House is going to, this week, it appears, move quite quickly to grant General Austin a waiver. He obviously needs a waiver because he has recently been a uniformed officer in the military, and there's a period of time, a cooling off period, to maintain our civilian leadership of the Pentagon. I will say this, though, Hugh. I think this is going to bring up an existential argument on the right and the left, frankly, about this rule. I think people are going to want to take another look at it, because I think that a lot of people don't want to keep granting waivers, Republicans and Democrats alike, and would rather reconsider the rule altogether. Not reconsider it meaning get rid of it, but if there are circumstances that people should be, you know, able to serve as defense secretary shortly after their military career, then they don't want to have to keep granting these waivers. I'm curious what you think. I think Tom Cotton has expressed some concern about the waiver and generally speaking. So I think this will be a big issue going forward.
Almost every member that I have spoken to who comes from a military background is concerned, because they saw under General Mattis, who I have a great deal of admiration for and I've spent some time interviewing, what they believe to be the problem with waivers, which is the recent commander stands up their most recent command to the exclusion of civilian input. And that is what the fear was, is that you would just take a bunch of very competent senior staffers from, say, CENT command and put them in the senior positions. However, I think it is practically impossible to persuade African-Americans in America that General Mattis deserved a waiver and General Austin, who is black, doesn't. I just think politically it's a nightmare, but some people will make that argument. Jake, inside baseball now, which is not in Punch Bowl this morning, they need an organizing resolution in the Senate. Trent Lott and Tom Daschle wrote about the last time the Senate was 50-50 and the rules that they adopted. Are we close to an organizing resolution in the Senate?
Actually, we had some reporting on this on Friday last week, which seems like it's about 20 years ago now. Yes, they are. Schumer and McConnell their aides have been talking for days, and it's going to mirror quite closely the Lott-Daschle resolution, which, as you remember, and I don't know that many of your listeners will remember, but mandated that if there was lockups in committee, in the committee process, because there are even allotments of seats in the committees, then that legislation would head straight to the floor, which in this case would benefit Democrats, obviously, because they have the tie-breaking vote in Kamala Harris, theoretically, if all Democrats are on board. But they are very close to that, and I think it's going to be relatively straightforward. There's not too many places you can go with this. So I think that's going to be, we'll see that in the early part of this week or next week.
I don't want to mislead our leader, Rithlers, though. If it goes to the floor, it still requires 60 votes to end debate.
That's right. Yep.
And
that's right. In almost every scenario, that's the case.
And is it not the case that the $1.9 billion that President-elect Biden is going to propose will be subject to the 60-vote minimum?
It will be, unless they somehow manage to get it onto a budget reconciliation package, which I really highly doubt. Yes, it will. I think that package, to be honest with you, and we've seen people on both sides, or we've seen Republicans for the most part, say it's out of question. They're not going to raise minimum wage to $15, and it's just too large of a package. The question I have, Hugh, is there some sort of movement in the first couple weeks to say, you know what, we're going to do a larger package, but we need to get some vaccine money out of the door immediately, or we need to get, you know, X, Y, or Z out of the door immediately, and we should do a bigger package, but we should move something first? And I think that's a big question. But, like, early on in this administration, to get a package of that magnitude through, I mean, listen, from a strategic point of view, Hugh, it's not stupid to just put out everything you want and then pare back, right? Like, that is not a bad negotiating tactic, I would say. But I think people recognize that this package, as constructed or as being described by Biden, is pretty pie in the sky, at least at the moment. But there are elements in there that both parties agree on and that will get bipartisan support.
Not the least. Now, I have a column in the Washington Post this morning on Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell remains the most effective Republican leader of my lifetime, and he's got the caucus together. Let me tell you what I think is the president-elect's savviest move thus far. And Ron Klain, by the way, is just as smart as they come. And so he's taken to Twitter. Have you noticed this, Jake? Ron is going to be the Twitter voice of the administration.
Yeah, I think that's smart. He's also a well-known, as you know, because you've probably appeared on TV with him a number of times, as have I. He was an effective communicator on TV as well.
Yeah, and I've done back and forth with him on the Washington Post. They announced that they're going to drop an immigration reform bill. I view this as smart because the first rule of politics is unify your allies and divide your opponents. My closest friend in the United States Congress is Tom Cotton. We have deep disagreements on immigration. For 15 years, I've argued for regularization of everyone in the United States who doesn't have a record of violence and building the wall. And therefore, just sort of a sweeping regularization, not amnesty, not the right to vote, but let's get everybody above ground and into the economy. I think that you will find that traditional divide in the Republican Party between no mas, nothing of the sort, and people like me who are so-called wet in the old Tory wet, dry spectrum, the immigration bill is going to divide the Republicans and unify the Democrats. When will we see it?
I think early on, but I think, listen, I think getting, could you, so the real question always becomes, can you get to 11 or 10 or 11 Republicans? That's the question on a thing like immigration. I could get you there. You could say, listen, I actually believe, and I want to write this at some point, Lindsey Graham is going to try to be Joe Biden's best friend. He's going to go back to that stance where he wants to have influence in the White House. We'll see if it works. But I think that you'll get, listen, you might lose Manchin, you might gain a couple of Republicans, but can you get to 10? And I just don't know. You know, I would be curious at what polling says at this moment. I mean, is a large-scale immigration deal at the top of voters' priorities? I don't know the answer to that.
I know that it would be significant for the country in terms of putting aside longstanding. And what Republicans want out of it, it's interesting. President Trump is leaving behind 450 miles of border wall. The most that anyone ever wanted was 800. They didn't want sea to shining sea. It's not necessary. Would the Democrats trade that final 250 miles of border wall for a massive regularization? I mean, I've been arguing for this for 15 years, so it's close, and therefore I'm hoping it happens. And we need to get the underground economy above ground for the purposes of understanding everything from revenue to census.
The biggest failure, one of the biggest failures in the Trump administration was that President Trump made the border wall about him and about his personal politics, which I thought was really stupid. And I'll tell you why. And I wrote this, and Anna and I wrote this in our book, which came out in 2019, which you graciously had us on a number of times to talk about. The wall has been supported by every Democratic leader going back to the Bush years. I mean, this has never been a controversial thing that there should be some sort of barrier on the southern border with Mexico. This has never been a controversial topic until Trump got into office. And you could argue whether it's his fault that he made it about himself or whether Democrats made it about him. So if there is some sort of package in which the wall is not a central, at least rhetorical component, I think, yeah, it's not hard to get done. This is the kind of issue, Hugh, that every single person who's involved in the legislative process understands what's at stake and what needs to get done to get it done. Right? There is no like, oh, we need to do this. We hadn't thought of that before. No, everyone knows it's generally some sort of trade for amnesty or regularization, whatever you want to call it. On one side, and, you know, enforcement on that side, too, on the other side, and a wall and some sort of barrier. This is not an unfamiliar topic. It just takes political courage and the right environment. I don't know, and I don't know either way, I don't know that this is the right time to do that in the first part of the administration. I think the number one priority of 99.9% of members of Congress is some sort of massive COVID relief stimulation deal, period. I just think that is what needs to get done. That's what the Congress is primed for. That's what America is primed for, because we're on the precipice of getting rid of this thing and getting everyone vaccinated, and there needs to be money out there to get this done.
Well, I think two things could be done at once, and I think they're very smart. Last thing I want to talk to you about, Mark Warner, who is the chairman of the Intel Committee, has promised big tech legislation. Have you had a chance to read Shoshana Zuboff's Surveillance Capitalism, Jake Sherman?
I have not, but I know that the tech companies are getting ready to get beat over the head and are, you know, I just think this is going to be a big, one of the big narratives of this Congress.
You may or may not know that for 20 years I've asked people if they've read The Looming Tower when they were a first-time guest on The Hugh Hewitt Show. I will now be asking them if they have read Surveillance Capitalism. By the way, she's a neo-Marxist professor of the left, retired from Harvard Business School. But the danger presented by big tech, and it isn't censorship of conservatives. That's not it. It's the accumulation of power and information over a free people. I think they are in for an unwinnable fight, and I think Mark Warner is ideally positioned to lead that. Last question. Will Punchbowl own the redistricting space? I hope somebody finds a place to write every day about the, you know, redistricting will be this year's story. Are you going to cover it in depth at Punchbowl?
We would like to, yeah, because we're all about power, people, and politics, and those three, and redistricting fits those three categories. Obviously, as you know, Dave Wasserman is quite good at the redistricting story at Cook Political Report and NBC. There are a lot of people. My former colleague Steve Shepard at Politico is very good at this, but it's something that we need to pay huge attention to because the nation is going to be realigned, and it's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of, in a lot of different states, a lot of power shifting all over the map. There's going to be seats lost and seats won. So, yes, we're going to have to figure it out. I mean, we're only a company of four people at the moment, so we have to train our firepower, so to speak, in the right direction. But it's a story we have to cover.
PunchbowlNews.com. May it grow soon. Thank you, Jake Sherman. Follow him on Twitter at Jake Sherman. Come right back here to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Selena Zito is next.
See the way he walks down the street. Watch the way he shuffles.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Selena Zito is my guest. It's time for the Yinzer Report. She's a columnist for the D.C. Examiner, Washington Examiner, and the New York Post. Her most recent two columns, one is about the Cleveland Browns fans, who are all deflated and somewhat down this morning, and the second one is about motor court life. Let's start with the Browns, Selena. You did a wonderful job capturing the excitement last week, but it's all gone up in smoke.
I'm so sorry. This kind of reminds me of 2013 when the Pirates went to the playoffs, like, and they beat St. Louis, and it was in Pittsburgh, and it was like the most amazing experience. The first time we got somewhat near, sort of near the play, baseball play, you know, October ball, if you will, and PNC Park was like lifted up and the city was like all together and it was wonderful. And then we lost the next game.
Yeah, it's the life of a sports fan. But you did a great job in Northeastern Ohio. Thanks you, the land. I want to talk about motor court life. First of all, a motor court is not going to be a familiar term to a lot of Americans. Explain what it is.
So a motor court predates the motel and or hotel. It is always, it's 12 separate cabins. They form sort of a semicircle around the main house. And they were what American middle-class families used during the, between the 20s and the 50s. To go on the great American road trip when they would drive across the country and either going to a family member's house or going on the big vacation. They usually just had one bedroom in them. And, you know, there are a lot of firsts that happen in motor courts. This is sometimes people's first experience with running water or electricity or central heat. They're also very community oriented because the way that they are laid out, they all have little front porches and people can talk to their, you know, someone they've never met before, you know, next door or across from them. And they just, had a way of bringing people together, but they also gave people shelter. You know, American families couldn't afford to stay in a big, luxurious hotel in a big city. Usually they bypassed the big cities.
Now it's interesting to me, Matthew McConaughey in his book, Green Lights, spends a lot of time in motor courts. And they're not unlike RV parks, but they're kind of removed from RV parks. What did you discover in your conversations with the motor court people?
Oh, they're very happy. They choose this kind of way of travel, not just to be connected, you know, for nostalgic reasons, but because they feel more connected to the community that they're going through. They feel like they're seeing a part of America that they might have bypassed if they jumped on the superhighway. And you know, people are longing for things that make them feel connected to each other, not just because of the pandemic, but also politics is playing a larger role in making us feel disconnected from each other.
Now, generally, is it white, middle class, lower middle class, or is it diverse?
Well, it's pretty diverse. Yeah, absolutely.
See, now that surprises me. I thought this was the reserve of white middle class people.
No, this was, there are all kinds of, and it's really interesting. I heard from people all over the country about going to motor courts and how much they love them. And they came from all kinds of backgrounds, not just white, but black and Hispanic. And a lot of them are still around, more than you would understand. And, you know, when we were growing up, people said, oh, that's a no-tell motel. No, that's not what a motor court is like. Traditionally, the owners of the motor court and their family live in the main house/office that's at the center of the motor court. They're not going to let any of that kind of funny stuff go on in their places. They feel very protective of their family image.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of the sanitation camps of the Grapes of Wrath era, where people became extended family. How long does the average resident stay in these things?
Oh, it can be either one night or a week. It just depends on how long you're out there for, out on the road for vacation. What's really interesting is they had this one woman stop by who came in her Cadillac, and she was dressed to the nines, and she was in her 80s. And she said she was there when she was 16 on her wedding night.
Oh, interesting. Selena Zito, always a pleasure. Everything Zito is collected at selenazito.com. Thank you for your kind words about the mourning Browns fans out there. America, I'm coming right back. Hour number two, my new column on Mitch McConnell, next on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.